You're listening to Life in Deep Ellum's podcast.
Hey, everyone. Here I am, beardless again. If you remember, a couple weeks ago, I played some old footage of when I still had my beard, and then after the break, I showed up with this baby face. Some people were like, who's the guest speaker? Others had, like, started it, and they saw me with my beard and, like, set it down on the kitchen counter and let it play while they did something in the kitchen. And when they came back and saw me without the beard, they're like, utterly confused. What did Facebook do to Joel's face? It was amazing. I had a great time with that. I don't have, like, staff members to prank right now. And so, like, I have this outlet to be able to prank you guys. So thank you for letting me do that. My favorite compliment came from Andrew Holshue, our resident filmmaker. And on Facebook Live, he said the reveal I orchestrated was flawless. Mmm. Whew. Like I'm the Martin Scorsese of pastors. Brings a tear to the eye, doesn't it? Well, it's great to be with everyone here again. Hopefully you all caught the update that Rachel gave. While Dallas County has moved into the orange phase, we are still not meeting in person until they downgrade that to the yellow phase. So here we are, connecting through pixels and megabytes. Now, we are trying to test out some things called micro-gatherings. That's what I'm calling it. It's a kind of a maximum of 10 people. And we want to make that available for people who are comfortable doing so. So keep your eye out. You'll see some opportunities to register because we will need people to sign up for that. And before we jump into the message on Ecclesiastes, we continue to honor the Hispanic Heritage Month. And this week we highlight Francisco Moreno, and Gina will be reading about his contributions.
Hi, my name is Gina Morielli, and this week's Hispanic Heritage Month feature is Francisco Moreno. Francisco Moreno is a Dallas-based artist born in Mexico City, Mexico in 1986. Francisco Moreno became an artist because the paper and pen always came easier to him than schoolwork or communicating via spoken language. When it's difficult to communicate certain words or feelings, for Francisco, art has always been his means of communication. Since Francisco's paternal grandmother, Nieves Moreno, is a painter in Mexico, his parents were not shocked or surprised when he communicated a desire to become an artist. Warning him of the hardship of that road, they always supported Francisco throughout his career. Melding art historical imagery with present-day tropes, Moreno harnesses the shared wonders, fears, and anxieties depicted by artists across the ages. Francisco utilizes traditional Aztec forms within his paintings, but also really enjoys intertwining American historical aspects. Currently, you can see Francisco's work at the Dallas Museum of Art in a show called For a Dreamer of Houses. His ambitious sculptural work, called Chapel, is currently on virtual view in the DMA exhibition For a Dreamer of Houses and has been acquired as a permanent installation of the DMA landscape. See Chapel in person, by appointment only. Francisco lives and works in Dallas, carrying with him a pride for being Mexican and Texan. His contributions to the city's artistic landscape will be enjoyed and remembered for a very long time to come.
Thank you, Gina. It's an honor to be able to celebrate Hispanic culture and acknowledge the Hispanic members of our faith community. It just feels right, you know? Nobody fits. Everyone belongs. So this is our fourth week in the book of Ecclesiastes. And in the first week, I introduced you to the author, Qoheleth. What kind of name is that, right? I read this other pastor who said that his name sounds like an Ewok. Wicket. There's Kazakh, Graok, Qoheleth. Yup, nub. That's Ewokese. It means hooray. Yubnub could also be translated as freedom. Well, Yubnub. How do I know this? Wikipedia. Some of you are like, that's a terrible joke, Joel. Wikipedia. It's not a joke. It's real. There's a Wikipedia.com, and there's an entire article on what Ewokese means. What a great time to be alive. Back to what Kohelet actually means. It's tied to a Hebrew word meaning referring to a gathering or an assembly of people. So it's a person that's addressing an assembly of people and often gets translated as teacher or preacher. I like Eugene Peterson's translation, the guy who wrote the Message version of the Bible. He translates it as the quester. I love that. You see, Kohelet is on a quest for truth. What is real? What truly matters? Hence the name of our series. What matters? So 2 weeks ago, Rachel talked on this Hebrew word that Kohelet loves and he uses all the time, hevel. Usually it gets translated meaningless. Everything is meaningless, a chasing after the wind. It literally means, hevel literally means smoke or vapor. So we tend to lean towards the translation of like absurd. It's not that Kohelet thinks everything is meaning. It has some meaning. It has some meaning, but then it disappears like vapor. It's there for a minute and then it's gone. So what is the point of that? It's not pointless. It's just odd, frustrating, absurd. And last week, Chris talked about Kohelet's emphasis on work and labor. Does any of the work we do, labor under the sun, does any of it make a difference? And if it does, how long does it last anyways? And what does it say about me as a human being? Chris also busted out some rhymes, some Hamilton rapping. So you should check that out on the Facebook Live video. It's pretty legit. And this week, I get to talk about a topic that most people spend their whole lives trying not to talk about. It's a topic that Kohelet stresses. It's the theme that runs throughout the whole book of Ecclesiastes. So we ignore it. Kohelet revels in it. What is this happy topic that I have the privilege of addressing? Death. Yay! Oh, makes me think of a comic I saw on the Instagrams. Jason regrets getting the room darkening shades. One of the shades is saying, happiness is fleeting. The other is saying, death is imminent. Personified window treatments. But it sounds familiar. This is what Kohelet is all about. Allow me to read a poem that Kohelet wrote at the end of his philosophizing about the hevel of life. It is Ecclesiastes 12, 1 through 8. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the days of trouble come and the years approach when you will say, I find no pleasure in them. Before the sun and the light, and the moon and the stars grow dark, and the clouds return after the rain, when the keepers of the house tremble, and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they are few, and those looking through the windows grow dim, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of grinding fades, when people rise up at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint, when people are afraid of heights and of dangers in the streets, when the almond tree blossoms and the grasshopper drags itself along and desire no longer is stirred. Then people go to their eternal home and mourners go about in the streets. Remember him before the silver cord is severed and the golden bowl is broken, before the pitcher is shattered at the spring and the wheel broken at the well and the dust returns to the ground it came from, and the spirit returns to God who gave it. Meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher. Everything is meaningless. Poetry is difficult to interpret on a good day, but Kohelet here has Old Testament scholars scratching their heads. Basically, there are three different ways to interpret this poem. The first one is literally, to take it literal. This is a description of a funeral. Mourners in the street. It is as if a lord of a great estate has died. So the poem is describing a literal event of death. The second way you could interpret this is to take the poem allegorically. This is all symbolic language about dying. Each line is about the deterioration of the body. Grinders cease because they become few. What's that? Teeth falling out. The songs of the bird grow faint. What's that? It's the loss of hearing as we get older. Windows grow dim, loss of eyesight. And though some prefer the allegorical interpretation, many scholars point to a third way to interpret this poem, eschatological, end times. This poem isn't just about death of an individual, right? But about a cosmic tragedy, a catastrophe. Grinders, they're not metaphorical teeth, but these are women workers grinding at the mill, which was very common. And in the Hebrew there, it's referring to women. So why would that be teeth? And why do these grinders become few? Because something disastrous has happened. People are dying left and right. The world as we know it is ending. And this interpretation sort of combines the literal and the allegorical. And to quote a Jewish commentary that I read, he said, "It is as if Qohelet is saying, when you die, a world is ending. Yours." Whoa. Can we pump the brakes here, Qohelet? Jeez. It's like Qohelet is a combination of every skeptical and depressing fictional figure that's ever existed, right? He's part like Eeyore. He's part like Marvin, the paranoid android from Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. And you can even throw in a little bit of Strong Sad. Do you remember homestarrunner.com? All right, come back to me. Come back to me. Whether you choose to interpret this poem literally, allegorically, or eschatologically, there's zero consensus on which one it is. I'm not sure it matters in the end, because whichever one you choose, the main point is still the same. You are all going to die. I'm going to die. You're going to die. Samantha is going to die. Who's Samantha?
I don't even know Samantha.
It doesn't matter. Samantha's going to die too. I'm having fun here. Why? I'll be honest. I feel the need to sort of balance out some of Qohelet's message. It's a complete downer, you know? Death and mortality, remember your creator in the days of your youth, is not meant to have a calming effect. That's how I learned it as a kid. It's not meant to be a call to remember the zeal for God when you were young. No, to quote one commentator, remember your creator in the days of your youth is to think on one's creator is to think on death. All of this is borrowed time. All of this is returning to God. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, and our spirit, our breath, returns to the creator who gave it. Are you listening? This is the wisdom of our scriptures. Life as we know it will end eventually. Which leads to Qohelet's conclusion. Everything is meaningless. All is futile. Nothing matters except one thing, accepting life on life's terms. God designed the world to work like this. Forget the past, ignore the future, live in the present, because that is literally all we have. It's absurd. Life is utterly absurd. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Where do I go from here? Where do you go from here? It's a fair question. Well, I would like to offer my three standard observations about Qohelet's challenge to accept life on life's terms. What does it look like to fully embrace the reality of death? And how do we build a life of meaning from that perspective? So observation number one, death integrates uncertainty. What I mean by that is that the idea and the practice of death, dying to self, acknowledges the reality of uncertainty. Guys, certainty is a myth. Like, it's an illusion. It doesn't exist. and dying to self helps incorporate the ambiguities of life into our reality. Death integrates uncertainty. But we have to be honest. We naturally avoid both of these topics, death and uncertainty. It makes me think of this comic I read on Instagram the other day. Yeah, I follow a lot of comics. It's two guys talking at an office, and what are they talking about? The weather. Of course, it's so safe and comfortable. We mostly talk about shallow and unimportant things, don't we? Weather, 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 weather. But then at one point, this other guy leans in to join the conversation and adds, existential dread? Crickets. No one is talking to you, Ted. So what do the two original guys do? They go right back to talking about shallow and predictable things. And guess who the existential dread guy is? Qohelet. Yep, nub. And like the comic, most people ignore Qohelet, the existential dread guy, right? Including people of faith. Forget existential dread. Let's continue crocheting Bible verses onto pillows, right? And where does the existential dread come from? What is this existence all about? Why am I alive? The answer, crickets. And that's where the dread comes from. It's the cosmic response to the age-old question. We shake our fists at the sky and we cry out, why do I exist? What's the meaning of life? And the skies whisper back, that's a great question. Just keep asking it. There's a guy I've been listening to recently by the name of Peter Crone. They call him the mind architect. And he argues that uncertainty is just a part of life. It just is. Life is uncertain. But he points out that the way our brains have evolved and the way that they function, the role that they play, is they are designed to protect us and to make us feel secure. So on a subconscious level, our brains are trying to reject the uncertainty of life. They're trying to reject reality. Our brains are telling us in some ways, life isn't uncertain. Life follows a clear plan. Don't worry, Samantha. Life fits neatly into pie charts and line graphs. It's all predictable. To quote Dwight Schrute from The Office, false. Life is uncertain. It just is. And the reality of death, the impermanence of existence, helps me integrate that truth. Acceptance. You know, at the end of The Half-Blooded Prince, my favorite book of the seven, Dumbledore and Harry are on a dangerous mission to destroy one of Lord Voldemort's Horcruxes. And if that sentence doesn't make sense to you, it's okay, I don't judge you, but what are you doing with your life? Anyway, Lord Voldemort protected a part of his soul, Horcrux, in an attempt to be immortal, all right? And he hid it in this dark cave, he surrounded it with his lake, made it very hard to get to with magical protection, and in the lake was like an army of dead bodies that would come out and attack anyone who tried to steal the Horcrux. And this concerned Harry, right? He told Dumbledore about his fear. And Dumbledore, who is my favorite fictional character of all time, explained to Harry that there was nothing to fear. There is nothing to fear from a body, Harry, any more than there is anything to be feared from the darkness. And then just before he drops the mic, he says, it is the unknown that we fear when we look upon death and darkness, nothing more. Death is a part of life. And until I can integrate the truth of uncertainty, the unknown, I will likely struggle with accepting life on life's terms. All right, so observation number two. Death integrates living. Yeah, maybe you remember that song by Tim McGraw. I went skydiving, I went Rocky Mountain climbing, I went 2.7 seconds on a bull named Fu Manchu. Right? Remember that song? It's a song about the reality of death brought new energy to living life to the full. Live like you were dying. And one of my favorite books is by Father Richard Rohr. It's called Adam's Return. And in the book, he addresses and discusses male initiation rites, basically how communities throughout the centuries have trained boys to become men. And Rohr claims that there are five basic lessons that every boy must learn to become a man, at least how communities have initiated them over the years. Number one, life is hard. Number two, you are not that important. Number three, your life is not about you. Number four, you are not in control. And number five, you are going to die. That's intense. And he would argue that one of the reasons we find it so difficult to embrace these is because our culture is filled with uninitiated men, many of whom have never come to grips with these truths. But he makes an intensely bold statement, and I feel like this is, you know, this last lesson that Qohelet emphasizes is one day we are all going to die. And Rohr says that we are like Adam. We were cast out of Eden, banished from paradise, yet all we really want to do is to return there. But even though we want to return to Eden, what keeps us back from that is the fact that we don't want to accept that we were made from dust. We are scared to return to dust. And this fear of death is, after all, what's keeping us from truly living. Or, as Albus Dumbledore once said, after all, to the well-organized mind, death is but the next great adventure. Rohr quotes part of a famous poem by W.H. Auden for the time being, and I wanted to read that to you. For the garden is only place there is, but you will not find it. Until you have looked for it everywhere and found nowhere that is not a desert. The miracle is the only thing that happens, but to you it will not be apparent. Until all events have been studied and nothing happens to you that you cannot explain. Life is the destiny you are bound to refuse until you have consented to die. Listen to that, friends. Just receive it and soak it in. Life is the destiny you are bound to refuse until you have consented to die. Sounds an awful lot like Jesus. If you want to find your life, you're going to have to lose it. Take up your cross and follow me. But miracle of miracles, death is not the end. It is not what we feared. Life continues. Or maybe I should say, life truly begins. Allow me to read for you another poem. This one is by Mary Oliver. It's entitled Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand. Who is moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down? Who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes? Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I have been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Death integrates living. What is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Maybe Tim McGraw's advice to live like you were dying isn't that far off. Life is the destiny you and I are bound to refuse until we consent to die. And the third observation, death integrates love. First, death integrates uncertainty. Second, death integrates living. But most importantly, third, death integrates love. So Father Richard Rohr talks about these five lessons of male initiation. He makes sure we know that one of the great lessons is that one day we're going to die. But at the end of his book, he applies the gospel to each of these lessons. And for one day you're going to die, he quotes Paul from Romans 8. And he says, yes, you are going to die, but there is nothing that can separate you from the love of God. Y-A-A-A-S-S-S says, yes, right? Neither death nor life, angels nor demons, not any height or depth, nothing can come between you or I and the love of God. Death exists, but love exists more. And death only proves just how powerful love can be. That's when love gets integrated. Gina Morielli is on our staff, and a month ago, her dad died. It was unexpected. He passed, leaving his wife and his three grown children. And at the funeral, there was grief and mourning, and there was love. So much love. And I've learned this is important for funerals. I learned this lesson many years ago when Beto and Lindsay's son, Beckham, died at the age of 2 with a heart condition. We had his funeral here in this room, actually. It was the day after Easter on a Monday. On the Sunday, I was proclaiming Christ's resurrection power. Then on Monday, I was speaking about the pain of grief and death. But as I addressed the crowd, I shared a truth that I had come to realize, that grief is a form of love. We don't grieve things that we don't love. Without love, there's no need for grief. They are inextricably connected. And Pastor Adam Nicholas Phillips shared a story that I wanted to share here. It's a story about a Jewish woman named Sheryl Sandberg and the death of her husband, who, like Gina's dad, was also named David. After her husband passed, she posted on Facebook, "Today is the end of Shloshim for my beloved husband, the first 30 days. Judaism calls for a period of intense mourning known as Shiva that lasts 7 days after a loved one is buried. After Shiva, most normal activities can be resumed, but it is at the end of Shloshim that marks the completion of the religious mourning for a spouse." Cheryl wrote about her deep grief and her struggle to find meaning in her tragedy. She said, "I have learned how ephemeral or how temporary everything can feel. And maybe everything is. That whatever rug you are standing on can be pulled right out from under you with absolutely no warning." Listen to Cheryl. She is channeling Qohelet. Vapor. Smoke. Absurd. Everything is ephemeral, temporary. A rug can just be pulled right out from under you. She closed her post with a story about some plans that she made with a male friend to try and create experiences for her son. It was painful. It felt like she was trying to replace her deceased husband, her son's dad. And so she wrote, "My friend and I came up with a plan to fill in for Dave. I cried out to my friend, 'But I want Dave. I want option A.' And he put his arm around me and said, 'Option A is not available. So let's just kick the shh out of option B.'" Cheryl concluded her post, "Dave, to honor you and your memory and raise your children as they deserve to be raised, I promise to do all I can do to kick the shh out of option B. And even though Shloshim has ended, I still mourn for option A. I will always mourn for option A. As Bono is saying, there is no end to grief, and there is no end to love. I love you, Dave." Qohelet forces us to look death in the face. We are challenged to accept this part of God's ultimate design. It's absurd, but it belongs. Qohelet applies his honest skepticism. Hevel, everything is hevel. But he stops there. And I would like to suggest that he needn't stop there, nor do we need to stop there. Death is real, but it is not to be feared. As Dumbledore reminds us, it is the unknown that we fear when we look upon death and darkness, nothing more. And with the acceptance of death, we take away its power. By accepting it, it loses its power. We integrate uncertainty into our understanding of faith. And miracle of miracles, we can accept life on life's terms. Death stops being something to avoid, but something Jesus taught us to embrace. Dying to the stories in our head. Dying to our false selves, or as Paul would call, the flesh. It releases and resurrects our truest selves. Death integrates living. Even when the rug is pulled out from under us, we can still kick the shh out of option B. And here we find the great good news. Nothing, not even death, can separate us from the love of God. As I said before, death exists, but love exists more. Or, as Dumbledore told Harry in that strange afterlife scene at the end of the 7th book, "Do not pity the dead, Harry. Pity the living, and above all, those who live without love." So now to him who's able to keep you from falling, to present you before his glorious presence without fault and with great joy, to the only God our Savior be glory, power, majesty, and authority through Jesus Christ our Lord, now and forevermore, throughout all the ages. Amen. Blessings, guys. We love you very much.